This is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
Science discovers wonders in the universe, but sometimes horrors here on Earth. About 251 million years ago, up to 90% of living things in the ocean died off. We call it the Great Dying, and global warming did it. On our current course of business as usual, new science shows mass die-off in the seas could happen again. The new paper published April 28th is titled Avoiding Ocean Mass Extinction from Climate Warming. The young lead author is Justin L. Penn. He began his research as part of a team at the University of Washington with co-author Curtis Deutsch. Justin is now an associate research scholar at Princeton. From Los Angeles at the moment, Justin Penn, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Now look, in 2021, humans set another record high for greenhouse gas emissions, and some economies are sizzling. Scientists on this program project that business-as-usual fossil fuel burning could make the planet 5 degrees or more hotter, and that's in centigrade, by the year 2100. According to your research, would that be enough to trigger a mass die-off of life in the world's oceans?
So our work has found that by 2100, in the scenario of 5 degrees of global climate change, that itself is not enough to cause a mass extinction, but it would place the oceans on a path that would, if warming continued, eventually lead to extinction. So we found that by the year 2300, if greenhouse gas emissions continue on their current accelerating trajectory, that would be enough. But it would take warming of something like 10 degrees, so warming that extends beyond the end of the century.
Well, let's get back to that so-called Great Dying. Could you take some time to tell us what happened then, please, Justin?
Yeah, for sure. So there have been 5 mass extinctions in Earth's history, and the one with the largest magnitude was during the end Permian, like you said, roughly 250 million years ago. We've known for a long time that this extinction co-occurred alongside global climate change, such as climate warming and the loss of oxygen from the ocean, among other environmental stressors like ocean acidification and changes in the primary productivity of the ocean. But until recently, we hadn't known the connections between the environmental changes and the collapse of the marine ecosystem that we can see in the record of fossil organisms from that time. So that's where our past study in 2018 came in. We combined climate model simulations of the past Earth during the Permian era, along with laboratory data on species' physiological sensitivities to environmental changes like ocean temperature change and ocean oxygen loss. And then we combined that with this mathematical model that allows us to predict how much oxygen organisms need relative to how much is in the environment. And when we combined all these pieces together, we could predict the patterns of extinction during this past ocean warming event. So why that is interesting is because the model actually predicted a specific geography of extinction. That is, species living closer to the poles were at higher risk of extinction compared to those living at the tropics. The next thing we did was we looked at the fossil record itself, which records how many species went extinct at different locations on the planet during the Permian. And what we found was that the fossil record actually confirms the model prediction that things living at the poles would have gone extinct at higher rates than those living at the tropics. And so that confirms to us that the end Permian itself was caused by global warming and oxygen loss, two changes which are similar to environmental changes occurring today because of anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions.
We think the increase in greenhouse gases almost a quarter of a billion years ago was caused by Siberian volcanoes, and they erupted for about 2 million years, it looks like, and it took a long time for that warming and dying. Does that compare with the rapid production of greenhouse gases by this civilization?
Right, that's a great question. So yeah, we think that the best dating on the timescale of the Permian extinction says it happened somewhere between 10,000 to 100,000 years. The warming that's occurring today is happening at a much more rapid timescale. The magnitude, The eventual magnitude of future warming is still unclear. But in the high emission scenario that we analyzed in our new study, the warming could eventually get to something like 10 degrees if greenhouse gas emissions continue to accelerate over this century.
Your paper notes that some things like marine heat waves are not included, but that is exactly what is killing off coral reefs needed for so many marine species. Isn't it likely that the speed of carbon buildup that we've just been talking about in the atmosphere this time could create disruptions that have never been seen before in the fossil record?
Yeah, and that's something that we haven't been able to take into account in our work, but is a useful next step to include the timescales of warming as a factor in extinction risk.
Most extinctions in our times have been on land, not in the sea. Why do you think extinction will move to the sea creatures?
Well, unlike on land, the direct human impact from the sea has sort of lagged behind, mostly because the ocean is quite remote and it's hard to get to, unlike places on land where humans live. That being said, as greenhouse gases accumulate in the atmosphere and the oceans warm, eventually, the deeper parts of the ocean will absorb some of that temperature change and will lose oxygen as a result. And that will lead to changes in remote parts of the ocean that are difficult to get to or have been historically.
Why does a warming ocean lose oxygen? And does the atmosphere gain that gas?
So most of the oxygen on planet Earth is in the atmosphere, and just a small fraction is in the ocean. As the oceans warm, it loses oxygen for two reasons. One is there's just less gas soluble in water at higher temperatures. So if you move from the poles to the tropics, you'll find less oxygen just in the baseline climate state at the surface of the ocean. And then as you warm up the ocean everywhere, you start to lose some of that oxygen from the ocean to the atmosphere, like you said. And then the second reason that the ocean loses oxygen has to do with the ocean's circulation. So if all the oxygen comes from the surface of the ocean, it has to be transported into the interior through ocean circulation. But as you warm the ocean, you start to slow down that overturning circulation that moves water from the surface into the deeper regions, and that slows the supply of oxygen into the deep.
Your work examines two major drivers of marine extinction, as we've been talking about, ocean temperatures and the amount of oxygen available for life. Other scientists point to ocean acidification as a major driver of marine extinction, including in the Permian-Triassic die-off. Why doesn't your study of climate impacts include acidification?
That's another great question, and acidification is another environmental factor that, when included in models of extinction, would only amplify the extinction risk that we've found in our paper. We focused on the two environmental drivers, warming and oxygen loss, in this current study because in the Permian, we found that these two environmental factors were the ones that can actually explain the pattern of extinction in the fossil record, whereas ocean acidification would lead to a pattern of extinction geographically that is in opposition to what we're finding in the fossil record. So it seems like it likely was not the leading cause of extinctions during that event.
We know overfishing is decimating some species, like the North Atlantic cod and others in Asia. Land-based pollution is also creating big dead zones in the sea. How do these other human drivers compare to global warming when it comes to the potential to kill off sea life?
Something we tried to look at in our study. It's definitely a difficult one to answer, and it's because of its complicated slew of interactions between all these factors. But one way we tried to look at this was to use the IUCN Red List of Endangered Species. So that list compiles all the different threats for different species that have been assessed by the IUCN and tries to figure out what fraction of species are currently endangered with extinction from human influence, including the factors you've named, like pollution and overfishing. And we found something that, based on the red list, something like 10 to 15% of species are currently at risk of extinction. Now, in our study, we could then project the fraction of species that are at risk of extinction through climate warming and ocean oxygen loss alone. And we found that under a high emission scenario where greenhouse gases accelerate over this century, that climate change will become comparable to all current human stressors by something like the end of the century.
Does your study include extinction of plants and other ocean life like phytoplankton and bacteria?
So our study is limited to water-breathing marine animal species because the mechanism of extinction in the study is the loss of aerobic habitat. So the loss of habitat regions where species can breathe oxygen. So things like plants, which produce their own oxygen at the surface ocean, would not be affected by this mechanism, although they could lose habitat just through the reduction of the ocean's overturning circulation, which supplies nutrients to the surface ocean that's critical for plant life.
Okay, so it's critical to realize, though, we're really talking about animals in this particular study.
Yes, exactly. And water-breathing animals. So things like mammals, like whales and dolphins, which breathe oxygen from the atmosphere, would not be impacted by this specific mechanism, although the potential for a shockwave through the food web that's caused by the collapse of species through this mechanism could propagate up to other organisms not directly affected.
Well, speaking of food, on this program, we tend to track threats to the world food supply, things like crop failures caused by heat or drought. Looking at figure 2 in your new paper, the most productive food fisheries of the world are also threatened by extreme global warming. Talk to us about that, Justin Penn.
Yes, we mapped out the regions of local species extinction caused by warming and oxygen loss, and we found that those regions tend to be centered towards the lower latitudes. And that arises because at lower latitudes, temperatures are already high and oxygen's already low. So species are closer to their eco-physiological limit for aerobic habitat. So any small change in warming could have a big effect in these regions. And those regions happen to be where the extraction of food from the ocean tends to be highest.
There's been a big movement to establish protected marine parks by many countries. Large areas have been set aside. But if species have to move to survive because of these changing conditions under warming, as you describe, maybe those marine parks become less workable.
Indeed. And actually, I was speaking with a reporter last week who coined the term marine protected anoxic zones, which basically means that you can establish these regions where you can't fish, but if those waters lose their capacity to supply oxygen to marine organisms, then you could lose biodiversity in those regions just through climate change alone.
Well, we have the same thing on land when we're trying to protect certain forests, but then the forests convert into grasslands or burn down. As we said, there's no good example in this planet's history of one species creating extreme climate change within a couple of centuries. But can you give us some clues of the signs to watch for, how this marine dying might unfold if we can't stop our pollution?
Yeah, that's another great question. So similar to the Permian extinction, we found that the regions of highest global extinction risk are those at higher latitudes. So we'd expect to find things going extinct globally first at higher latitudes. That being said, local biodiversity is expected to be lost first at the lower latitudes as things try to move away from the tropics and up towards the poles. That is, for species that are able to disperse and colonize new regions. Already we're seeing the migrations of species in the ocean that have been linked to climate warming itself historically over the past half century. And recently, we've been seeing local die-offs caused by fluctuations in ocean temperature and oxygen in small local regions. So as these stressors amplify and unfold, we expect those observations to play out.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Dr. Justin Penn from Princeton. We're discussing his new paper, Avoiding Ocean Mass Extinction from Climate Warming. These are all fantastic-sounding predictions we're talking about. It sounds like science fiction doom in a way. Justin, how confident are you that another great dying in the seas is possible, or is it even likely, if we don't change course with greenhouse gas emissions?
So the mechanism that we are that would cause extinctions moving forward from climate warming, we found is able to explain the extinctions that can be observed in the fossil record 250 million years ago. And so that gives us strong confidence in our ability to project extinctions moving forward. That is, because we can explain extinctions in the fossil record using this mechanism in the past, we expect that a similar mechanism will drive extinctions in the future. That being said, we found in the study, one of the main things that we found was that the magnitude of the future extinction depends strongly on how much greenhouse gases we emit moving forward. So the future, we found, is not written in stone. It depends strongly on human behavior and how much CO2 we emit over the next century.
Yes, you and your co-author and mentor, I might say, Curtis Deutsch, say it's still not too late to avoid mass extinction from climate change. But I got to say, here on Radio EcoShock, back in 2010 and earlier, scientists said we had another 10 years to avoid the worst, and now those 10 years are gone. When is it too late? Do we know that?
That is a great question for a follow-up study. So in our study, we looked at two idealized greenhouse gas emissions trajectories, one where emissions continue to accelerate this century, and another where emissions trends are reversed starting now and then continue to decline over the next century. And in that case, extinctions are kept low and well below mass extinction levels seen in the fossil record. One interesting thing is in our study, we plotted extinction risk as a function of global temperature change. And what we found was that regardless of the emission scenario, so in the high emission scenario or in the low emission scenario, the amount of extinction you get per degree of temperature change is pretty similar. So what that means is that allows us to sort of think about, for any amount of temperature change that we might expect, how much extinction can we expect? So even if reality falls between the two emission scenarios, we can sort of look up how much extinction we'd expect for how much warming might occur.
But if humans miraculously wake up and slash emissions and manage to squeak under 2 degrees C of warming by 2100, that's just less than 80 years, what does life in the ocean look like in that case? What can we hope for?
So what we also did is we took extinction risk projections for the future, and then we applied them to the fossil record of marine biodiversity over the last half billion years. And what we found was in the high emission scenario, the number of animal species in the ocean would drop to something like we haven't seen in the past roughly 50 million years. However, if humanity does get greenhouse gas emissions under control, this would preserve the marine biological richness that we've seen accumulated over the last half billion years and preserve it going forward. That being said, solving the climate problem does not lead to reduction in the overfishing of the ocean and other direct threats like marine pollution. So those extinction risks from those threats would still have to be dealt with.
While you were at the University of Washington, did you by any chance cross paths with Dr. Peter Ward and his theory of how hotter oceans produce toxic gases that killed off many land species?
I never directly met Dr. Ward, but I have read his work. Are you thinking of something like hydrogen sulfide?
Yes, Under a Green Sky was the book that proposed that theory.
Yeah, so I have read that. And interestingly, we found for the Permian, where hydrogen sulfide has been proposed as a mechanism of extinction, we found that to explain the fossil record, you actually don't need to invoke hydrogen sulfide as a kill mechanism, although it could have contributed.
Okay. And you're a young scientist taking on one of the biggest questions there are. Will life as we know it survive the human experiment? And you might live long enough to know whether we are committed to another great dying. How do you cope with this heavy stuff on a personal level, Justin?
I am an optimist, I think, in my life in general. And so I'm trying to focus on the fact that greenhouse gas emissions are not set in stone, and the fate of marine life has not yet been written. So now is the time to start changing our greenhouse gas trajectory. And if I'm not here to get on my soapbox and say it, who will?
Does it bother you? I mean, we're talking about the potential for mass extinction. We hope it doesn't happen. We do have a way out of it, it appears. But this whole story is kind of lost as a quick blip in the news cycle. It's somewhere between war and celebrity gossip, and then it's gone. But the process you're talking about, it's not gone. It's just ongoing. And how can we overcome this need for 140 characters of Twitter when we've got a really deep problem like this? Do you have any ideas on that?
I don't have a good answer for that. It does give me hope that stories like this do seem to generate a lot of interest amongst the general public, even if it's short-lived. Just the response I've gotten, and Curtis and I both have gotten over the past week to our research, has been a slight silver lining. How to sustain that interest and that momentum moving forward, that is something that I don't have a good answer to.
Well, part of the way you sustain that is by continuing your research. And what are you working on now, and what do you hope to work on next?
We've tried to understand how climate warming and ocean oxygen loss have caused and Permian extinction, but there's four other mass extinctions, and their causes and the role of climate change in them still remains unclear. So moving forward, I hope to try and investigate the role of these changes in those other extinctions.
From Princeton University, currently in California, we've been speaking with Associate Research Scholar Dr. Justin Penn. He and Curtis Deutsch just published the paper Avoiding Ocean Mass Extinction from Climate Warming. It's in the journal Science, which is a top journal. Find links to follow up in my show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Justin, thank you for helping us dig into the big questions of climate change.
Thanks for covering this and doing the good work.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. ecoshock.org.